I love the festive red shirt there. Very
Yep.
Yeah.
what we're trying to
Got
do
my Dilbert out too.
today. Oh yeah, you're right. Very cool. Very good. Very good. All right. Oh my gosh, Adam Stewart, it's been a minute. How are you? Are you posted up in front of your new machine?
Yes, new machine for a moment. We are trading it in over here.
Oh.
Didn't quite work out. We're gonna get another one pretty yet.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. And Bob Nickel, how are you, sir?
I'm ready for the holidays. How about everybody else? More or less.
I think we're all there too.
Yeah.
I think we're all there too.
Yeah.
Sure.
And Harvey Hirsch says you're still connecting to audio. Don't know if we have you yet.
We no, Harvey, we can't hear you, buddy. And we got Brandy, Rose, and Marco. How are you guys doing?
Hello, guys.
Hey,
Good
guys.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, listen, it's so nice to see all of you here. I just want to really quickly thank you guys for coming. I want to also thank our sponsors who kind of made this possible. So our sponsors usually pop in a little bit later in the call. So big thank you to MGI. A big thank you to Paper Specs and Sabine Lens, as well as Jeff Peterson and the folks over at the Digital Embellishment Alliance. They're really doing some great stuff to kind of push the market forward and expand the knowledge and education. As you know, that's one of the big things. So that being said, welcome everybody to the holiday edition of the Digital Embellishment Meetup. Without further ado, let's just kick it off to what yoked Santa host, Mr. Matt Redbear. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, good. Thanks, Kevin. Hey, I got to tell everybody here that this is really out of character for me because I would more likely be wearing a Scrooge outfit than a Santa outfit. That's just my take on it. I'm usually very hot, bah humbug during the holiday season, but this year seems to be a little bit different. Fortunately, we're still seeing some holiday glitter. We're still seeing some holiday cheer. And and in our business with printing and production, we're over the hump. We're on the downside, and now billing and invoicing, they're completely overwhelmed with trying to get the statements out. But we've done the work, we've gotten all the cards out, and I have to say, as far as design trends go, this year it was simple.
Really?
Very, very simple. Nobody really wanted to do anything over the top. No, I mean, there's embellishment. There's definitely a demand for embellishment, but it's not that extreme level, that fever pitch level. Everyone has kind of brought it back down to a sensible level, which is where I live.
Right.
I'm not the, I'm always the less is more guy, just enough to make it like really be different, but not that gloppy, completely coated mess that I don't know. I just don't resonate with that. I really think that less is more. I had a few experiences with a couple different runs this year that, reiterated that over and over and over again. And I don't know about you all. I don't know, Adam, Brandy, I don't know what you're seeing out there as far as what's running through your machines.
A lot of cards.
I get a few, but not a whole lot. I think I maybe have five Christmas cards.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Wow. How about you, Brandy? What are you even seeing?
I feel like people are wanting embellishments and they're like, we gotta have something, but it's maybe not as thought out from the beginning. And it's like, okay, here's our design. What can we put on now? We want something on there. So it ends up being pretty simple because of that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that says a lot. And I think Mark, you also kind of preached this as well, is it's hard to throw embellishments in at the very end and make it look good. It really needs to be thought out from the beginning. And is that kind of what you're saying, Brandy?
Yeah, it's absolutely what I'm saying. it's not really in the initial brainstorm of the design. It's design is ready, design is approved. Here's the files. Hey, we want embellishments. Can you put something on here? Mm-hmm. It's not out. Sometimes it's poor.
Brandy, do they know about embellishments, or do you feel it's they're not sure what to ask for?
I don't know that they're educated yet. They're seeing.
Wait. Mark, high five. No, that's what Mark and I have been saying all along. Yeah,
we're working on it. They're getting excited. They're seeing samples. They're like, oh my gosh, we want this, but it's not to the point yet where it's premeditated in their design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even internally, you know, I came up with three different designs for our Blue Ocean Press Christmas card this year. And they were, as far as I'm concerned, pushing the limit for being over the top. And then they picked one of them, which was the simplest of the three, they being sales and management. You know, I stepped back this year. Like, I'm not going to make any decisions. I'll do the design, but I'm not going to be the one that decides what it's going to be. I'll just put that in someone else's arena for a while. It was actually a good idea. Take a lot of stress off. So I came up with three designs. They picked one. They said, well, come up with two more. So and I thought, okay, well, they're headed in a less complicated way. I had stuff that was really, really busy. Then I came up with one more, and then I couldn't come up with a sixth one. I'm just like, ah. So I just threw something together. My least favorite of all of the six. And
that's the one they picked.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one. That's it.
Sorry, that's a designer's life, Matt. Never put anything you're not 100% behind, because that's the one they're going for.
So that's what it ended up being.
Is that gold and silver?
It's red and gold foil.
Okay.
On that shine sock, it has that very pearly finish. So my general manager, and it just has a message inside, but the paper has a really nice sheen to it. You can see that.
That's the original embellishment, right?
Yeah, it is. So what happened is my production manager was rooting for a particular design that I did in the first set of three. And when he found out it was this one, he had the biggest outburst. He's like, no, that's the worst of all of them. And I'm like, thanks. I designed that. Thank you very much. But it's not the one that he was rooting for. And so I came back to him afterwards and I said, the only thing that's going to save this in his mind would be the paper stock. And so to be very careful which paper stock that you choose. So that's where it actually redeemed the whole project into becoming something that I felt was a good approach for what we wanted to present here as far as shiny, simple, embellished, foiled, no varnish, just two foils, and just simple as could be.
So a little bit more elegant, a little bit more Spartan in their use, which is the subtlety sometimes what makes it look the best. Al, how about you? Bob, what are you guys seeing? Did you guys do a lot of embellishment cards this winter or this past month or so? Or
you know, what we're trying to do right now is make sure that the clients that send us print ready files, which we have a lot of them, that they understand how to do this. And I've really, my biggest client is sending us files with embellishment on them already. And we're trying to convert some other ones. We still continue to, you know, get print files and dress them up with embellishment for prospects we're trying to go after. So we're still out there pushing it. But the one thing I'm doing right now is we're trying to say to all of our salespeople, make sure that everybody that does send us these print files that are ready to go really understand what they can do with embellishments. So we've got sort of a push going right now to make everybody aware. And I mean, and a lot of our bigger clients are using it all the time. So we've been successful there. We want to get it further out into the marketplace.
100%.
Al, are you getting PDFs or are you getting our original artwork?
I mean, we get PDFs, but we try to get the working files as well, so we can do a few things. It just depends on who the client is, but we'd like to get natives whenever we can, so that if we have to do something, we can.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing I'm seeing more and more, Al, is because when people can't figure out how to do it the most current right way, they go back to doing it in the oldest old school way. We're talking about separations, as in a different file to represent the foil, a different file to represent the varnish. I'm serious. And so they give me all these separate PDFs, and they'll register, you know, they're all in the right place, which suggests to me that they built the file correctly in the first place with all those layers in place, and then exported all those layers, because how were they going to position it if they hadn't done that in the first place? So, but in their minds, the only way they could think to give it to a printer is to separate out all those layers and give them to you individually, and then expect me to recompile them when they had already done that in the first place. And I don't quite understand that strategy.
Yeah. Is it wait, lack of education?
Wait. I need to speak up for the designers in the Good. World. Sorry, guys. You're all printers, so it's up to me. You need to tell them what they don't know anymore. They spend 80% of their time on digital and web and God knows what. You need to tell them in very simple terms, short sentences, simple words. This is what I want from you. That's the only way you can get it, because otherwise they make it more complicated in their head than it has to be. And then you are the recipient of this complicated smorgasbord, and you have to compile it again.
That's a good question. I mean, Sabine, we have a good mix of designers here, and people who are on press. For the people who are on press, what's like the number one thing that you wish that designers would think about or understand from an operational standpoint when sending you files? Like, what's the one thing we should be teaching designers, if there's one? Let's go around. What do you guys think? Matt, you can kick it off if you want.
Well, I'd actually like to hear what Nicole thinks about that.
Oh, Nicole. We got people. We got Nicole, and we got Sean. How you doing, Sean? And we got Andrew, who I haven't seen in like a year. Good to see you, buddy. How are you?
It's good to see y'all too.
What was the question?
It's basically what, I don't know how to reiterate this actually.
The number one thing you want designers to know about setting up their files. Would that sum it up, Matt?
Gotcha. Simple. Yes, 100%. So tell them. Tell them how to do it.
Wait.
Oh wait, it's so fuzzy. We can't see.
I think I have to unblur my background. There, Brandy's got it.
Oh, over there.
So create something that using your technology that tells them how to set up files. So what we were encountering from a sales and a design and a pre-press production standpoint is we, like you, Matt, were getting files in every way, shape, and form because no one was being educated on how to set up files. So ultimately what was happening is costs for projects were being then elevated for additional pre-press time. So in order to combat that, the sales and graphic design and production team just came up with some nice marketing pieces and how-to guides that really empowered the clients to do things how we needed them to be done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have other clients that aren't completely, you know, lost. They mm-hmm. get most of the way there. They give you a workable file that you just basically need to go in and refine it a little bit, maybe move the layers around, or the swatches exactly the way that they're supposed to be. But they'll get you really close. And as long as they're giving me the native file with layers, then it's really easy to work with. But there again, you know, pre-press experience does help, because you're dealing with, everyone sets up their files differently. And then you have to interpret how they set up their file and then try to extract out of it what you need to send to your machine.
Yeah. How about you, Mr. Nickel? I know you have a lot of experience with traditional and digital embellishment. Like, what's the one thing that you wish your customers would do from a design perspective based on the files that you guys are getting?
You know, that's always the good question. And we found out just communication early up front.
Yeah.
Actually, even if it's before they start doing some of the designs, or they send us two or three of their designs, kind of like what Matt has been doing, you know, and we try to guide them along that path of how the files are going to be. And then we also do, you know, a lunch and learn for certain customers,
cool.
more on the
on the cosmetic side of the segments, which we're rocking with right now. I mean, there's, you know, both machines are going pretty good awesome. On that line. So, but yeah, it's all just talking to them way up in front so they understand.
And is that mechanism like more of a discussion, like a meeting? Or is it more like, here, look at this YouTube video that we did for you? Or is it like a guide that you send them? Like, what's the mechanism that you find works the best for you?
So it starts with a Teams call where we show them some things, and we grab the screen and we show them some different separations, and we you know, they understand, okay, you can't go below a 6-point font on certain foils,
right?
Okay, or how many microns of polymer do you really want on this thing? You know, more is not necessarily always right, and then there's always the question about the scores. Oh, we got to cross, you know, we got to have a color crossover into a score, and can we do that? It's like, no, you know, we could wean it down across a score, but you know, and then from that standpoint, they usually get a couple ideas and they send us some files. We work them, we send them back, or that's the perfect opportunity for a salesman to walk in and say, here you go. Here's your three examples.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it in a nutshell, you know. We have a sales kit too. That's pretty cool. I think I have one. Yeah. So this is a basic sales kit.
Nice. Oh, is that a box?
Yeah. We put stuff in there. It's, you know, it's got the cast secure on it, and it's got ray polymer foils. So.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
People who do well with it have good self-promotion stuff. Like the guys at American Printing do phenomenal self-promotional stuff. Like your calendar, I have my calendar here. It's like 3 years old. I still look at it. It's still there. It's like, you guys, that's great.
Yeah, one of my challenges as far as self-promotion is that a lot of the clients that we deal with here are corporate, and it's departments deep. It's impossible to get to talk to the people you need to talk to. Everything has to be a liaison through the salesperson. I mean, there's no way I could ever talk to the designer that is actually doing the designing. First of all, it's kind of on a corporate level forbidden. And second of all, the salespeople are kind of very protective of their position in the sales stream. So it's really challenging for me, because my only way of attempting to get a correct file is through education through my own salespeople. And quite frankly, they're not interested.
Interesting.
Wow.
How about Mark and Sabine on that point? You guys deal a lot with the brands and themselves. Is there really that barrier between what the designers are doing at these big corporations and being able to get to them for that education part, or you don't necessarily see that?
Well, I think in general it's harder to get to designers because they're not in one nice central location anymore as they used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, and I hear this from so many salespeople. They're like, wait, you know, I went to New York and I wanted to do this agency, and they said, well, can stop by. There's only two of us left. The other 20 are working God knows where.
Right.
So that makes it harder for sure. But as we've also seen, and I think Matt, you experienced, they're hungry for the education once they get it. You know, they're mm-hmm. willing to embrace it in their own way. It's just we need to get to them. There is, you know, it would be too easy if there would be a direct path. You just have to reach all designers, because in some way, shape, or form, a certain percentage of them will be in-house designers, and then bring it back to their team and say, look what I just found, you know, that kind of thing.
And that's why we have these meetings as well. But you know, try to get designers on this meeting, and it's a difficult chore just as well.
Yeah. The other thing you run into with brands is they switch every 3 to 5 years. They're doing agency outside work, then they bring it internally. Yep. Like 2 years ago, right after COVID, P&G brought in all their designers again, and they'd gotten rid of all their designers and went out to the agencies. The problem with printers, I hate to say it, they get involved in procurement. You know, here's our price. This is what we want done. So like you're saying, you're just too late. We deal with the brand manager, so we're actually in at the design at the beginning,
right?
Which took us a long time to do. It's not easy. I don't care what anybody says, but
right.
we do a presentation about every 6 months for several of our brand customers on what is going on in the industry, not just our technology. We just show them samples of different printing technologies.
Mm-hmm. Very.
That's worked out real well for us. It's sort of given us a very nice position.
Good. And guys, just so you know, that actually brings up a good point. So we're doing with what they think, we teamed up to do the digital embellishment study, we're calling it. It takes 10 minutes to do. I'll put the link in there, but if you guys have like literally 10 minutes and you haven't filled it out, please go on there and just answer some questions about your digital embellishments and what kind of trends you're seeing. And then if you fill it out, we will send you a free copy of the report if you want. So it's anonymous. And if you want a copy of the report, you just put your email address and you'll receive that report once you filled it out. So I'll put that in the comments. But I think one question that you kind of, you know, tilted my head, Mark, is what has been like the trend and like the best foil that people are asking for recently? Have you guys seen any kind of trends where certain color foil, a certain type of effect is really starting to surge in this past couple of months? What are you guys seeing out there?
Oh, well,
we got Sean. Sean's going to talk. What's up, Sean?
Got it. Yeah. I can tell you. Go ahead.
No, you go for it.
No, I was just going to say, gold never goes away. Let's be serious, right? Mm-hmm. And those kind of things. However, in 2023, because of some people we work with at bigger brands, all the earth tone colors now, they want not the strong foils. What they're looking at now is the earth tone, the blues, the greens, the browns, so it doesn't clash with their CMYK files. And they want more of a soft transition for whatever customers they're dealing with. But gold's never going to go away on their cores. But now we're seeing a transition as they're bringing out new products to go towards millennials and Gen X's. Mm-hmm. That's not so in your face. Mm-hmm. And goes against what their other spot colors are doing.
Interesting subtlety.
And yeah, I would agree with what Mark's saying. I think a wider color palette is definitely becoming more popular. Obviously, holo foils and iridescence are something that I think people ooh and ah over. 'Tis the season for, you know, golds and silvers. This is a piece that we did talk about Christmas cards, you know, that that's you beautiful. Know, just has a little fourfold open piece and a little cookie on the inside, some subtle gold on the inside. But it was, you know, it was a nice little treatment. And, you know, I think it was maybe Bob that had mentioned, you know, having to choke in across the folds and the creases and things like that. So, you know, I think we're seeing in the holiday season this year, obviously just some subtlety of the, you know, not as much spot UV. This piece has zero spot UV on it. It's just all foil. That's it. Except for the back, obviously. But, you know, it didn't have a lot of that tactile part. It was really just kind of, you know, having to get that nice little foil and flash. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of that as I've been traveling across a couple different customer sites in the past few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And Sean, one thing that I've noticed too is that when they are using embellishment or foil board or something like that, it's becoming more isolated. Like it's like over here in the corner, or it's just around the edges a little bit, just enough to get the point across. Like, hey, this is a special piece, but like you said, now it's not in your face.
Right.
And it was funny because Mark, you're talking about earth colors. Mocha is the color, the Pantone color of the year.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it.
And it's not in our library. I can promise you that.
I hate it.
Gotta love it.
Yet.
I saw that and I just like, oh.
Well, I mean,
really,
you have different foils that are more copper tone. I've been seeing a lot more matte requests than glossy on the foils. I don't know, Adam, what are you seeing out there? What's kind of, because Adam, you do some spectacular work, buddy. You some of the stuff that you have is like in my Hall of Fame. What are you seeing right now?
I do a lot of the hollow foil, like, you know, what's really taken off is my blue hollows, green hollows, red hollows. You know, the people, you know, a lot of these teams will use those reds and greens and blues, and then and they really want it to pop. They'll say, "Do you have in hologram?" That changes the look of it tremendously.
Adam, just for everybody's understanding, you're not buying these like red holograms or blue holograms. You're making them yourselves, correct?
Actually, the blue, red, and green are Liberty Foil makes those.
Oh,
I don't have to custom order those. But some of my purples and oranges and stuff like that, I have to buy like 30,000 feet in order to get it made.
I saw you doing some banana stuff. Were you using regular foil on your first pass, and then on the second pass, putting a holographic clear on top of that regular foil, which looks spectacular? You're basically turning any foil that you have into a holo. Is that something that you're still doing a lot of, or not so much?
I have done it, but I'm not necessarily, because I've actually got the holos that I need.
That's okay.
So, but in the beginning, before I found the reds and the greens and the blues, like, what can we do to make this red hologram? You know, so that's when we were putting the clear on top.
Yeah. So that's a nice little shortcut for anybody here. If you need a certain foil color, just make sure you stock up on that clear holo foil. Because you can just put that over any existing foil to make it a holographic one. And then maybe we should get somebody from Liberty Foils to kind of show what they're doing. Is this new stuff?
I don't know how new it is, but it's new. It was new to me. It was Gerardo that mentioned it in the very beginning. And so soon I was like, I've never heard of Liberty. So I reached out to him and said, what all do you have? And he goes, name time.
Anybody else?
Like, Red Hollow is like, yes.
Yeah. Anybody else using some of that stuff from Liberty or tried it?
Right. Yeah, we've used it for sure.
Yeah.
And? You know, we go through a lot of foil, but you know, as far as foil colors too, gold is number one, obviously.
Yeah.
We're still seeing a lot of rainbow. Decent amount of rainbow. And they're kind of using it too much, right? and then from a spot, you're probably seeing like pillars. Pillars of light.
Pillars of light.
A lot of that, you know. And we are playing around with some holographic foils that are still in development, but you know, it's probably about 8 months away. But we'll expose when it's ready. Put it that way.
So I have a question.
We did an insane to show kind of all of our foils. This was 18 passes, which is. We all know how incredibly hard that is.
Ugh.
But
feel free, man.
It kind of shows what all we have. We got, we don't have everything we have. We don't even have any of the red, green, blues before we even found it. But that does help spark people's interest in different colors and stuff that they can use.
Adam, what's the backside of that piece?
It's our company. Our company is called Ghost Smell.
That's adorable. I love it. Nicely done.
And I'd also like to mention, too, what we discussed in last month's meeting when you were all here, some of you were here, that if you can't find certain foil tones or you want a different tone that is just completely out of the ordinary, create your own. And you know, like we did this and overprinted the silver foil. Right. And so we put that color haze on top, and it really changes the way that it works entirely. And so, you know, that's always an option as well, if you have the machinery to handle that.
That's just toner on top of foil.
Yeah, yep. Can you unpack that, Matt? What is that now?
You missed this, Nina. This is
I'm going to make you a video. Is what I'm going to do.
Okay, awesome. I love it.
Yeah. So it went on the Irides for the base print. Then it went on the MGI for the silver foil. Then it went back on the Irides for the overlay to the silver foil. Then it went back to the MGI for the varnish overlay.
Wow, that's neat. Gorgeous.
On the rest of that. And it keeps going. It goes on a long way.
Can you tell me again, Matt, and I know we talked about this last time, how high the foil was? Because in my mind, it still has to be flat in order to run the ear desk. But
that was 73 microns of varnish.
Wow. Yeah. You ran 73 microns to that ear desk?
Yes.
You don't want to tell Xerox that. They're going to.
I just want to say, this is forever.
And. Nope.
And you got to make sure it's printable foil. You got to make sure it's printable foil before you fry it.
Actually, well, Mark, this is right down your alley. No? This is a lot of what you do.
The thing, too, is that the digital foil no longer has that plastic overlay to it. Whereas if you do traditional foil, it will have that plastic layer on top of it. So you can do that with digital foil, but don't try it with traditional foil.
Has anybody
tried? And what about the registration?
Yes, that's a good question.
Okay, so I'm going to cover that in my video too. You will have a, like up to an eighth of an inch shift, depending on how good your operator is. We have a really stellar operator, so he probably gets it down to a 16th of an inch or maybe 3 millimeter shift.
Are you talking about yourself?
No. I'm talking about Mark Vincent.
Your desk operator?
He runs the Xerox. But this, the overlay was fuzzy, had very fuzzy edges. So it wouldn't perfect. Matter how much shifted or moved.
Registration, you wouldn't do that.
No, I don't think you could. I don't think you could. Okay. It couldn't be exact. I mean, you could try, and you'd probably have a lot of waste involved in order to make maybe a 50-50 attempt. But as long as you're just generally covering the area, you know, I've done it with line work as well. I did a video on that too, a long time ago. I overprinted a rose black toner. So the rose was solid gold, and then I put the kind of the inset of the detail of the rose on inside. But it was within an eighth of an inch of the edge of the area that the foil covered to make the shape of the rose. So if it bounced a little bit, it's still a perfectly acceptable outcome.
But if you would go flatter in the microns, would your registration be tighter?
I don't think so. Well, it depends on your machine. So it depends on how accurate the feed is on your Xerox or your Ricoh or whatever you're using for digital CMYK. So
the guys in ITIS did it with the KM1. I will have the calendars, I think, in next 2 weeks. So the next year, I can show you all the things that they did there with the Evo and the KM1.
Mm-hmm. Also, Mark, that's going to be my next question. Then it works with the inkjet? No way.
They did. Yeah, they did it. So they printed, then foiled, and then printed again, and then varnished, or just foiled first, and then overprinted with KM1 UV, and then another foil, and then varnish. Yeah, the Mate is a great designer up there, and he do a lot of good things. Yeah.
Yeah, I suspect you could get better registration if you were using inkjet technology rather than toner. And additionally, we have these huge inkjet printers upstairs that like the SwissQ Print 2000 or the Jetty Toro. And so you could get that registration down really tight on those machines. But of course, it's going to be a more expensive process because you're laying all the flat sheets out on a large bed for the machine to go over and lay down the inkjet.
Yeah. I got to tell you, though, that the toner machines from several of the manufacturers are getting so much better with registration. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, our front to back.
We did this on a Ricoh.
Wow.
Very nice.
And then we put Duplo on top.
Yeah.
And that was on a 7100. That was two generations ago.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's crazy. The digital is getting so incredible.
That's one beauty. One beautiful thing about the MGI too is that automatic registration. So even if the machine does print it a little skewed or a little bit, it'll still correct it for the foil and varnish, and you don't have to worry about that too much.
That's nice.
You get really spoiled with that.
So speaking of really cool pieces, Bob, you're on the board of the FSEA. We have an annual awards gala called the Gold Leaf Awards. They just opened up the entries. I'm going to put in a link for you guys to look at. If you have some cool pieces, please submit them. This is a great way to show your customers and your other customers all the crazy good work that you're doing. And Matt, how many of you won? How many Gold Leaf Awards do you have in your closet there?
Eight, nine.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot. They like me for some reason, but the one to ask that question is Christine Yardley, because she can't hold them all in her arms at one time.
Yeah.
She's just overflowing with awards from them, and rightfully so.
Right.
Hey, Kevin, one thing about that too, I saw that come back from Kim Peterson. There was nothing in there other than foil. It has nothing in there for awards to submit for toner-based machines on metallic stock. Are they missing an opportunity?
Oh, they have a thing called overprinting foil.
Is that what they call? Is that what they're...
Maybe it's a... You know what? I'm going to talk to Jeff about that. That's probably a great point.
That's misleading because foil, no offense, I think of what we're talking about here, most of us right now. Yeah.
I think
printing foil.
Yeah, I think what you said is correct, and I'll actually call Jeff Peterson after this to make sure that he updates it so that we can obviously bring that in. And that kind of brings us into one of the questions that somebody asked here. We have hold on, where's my chat? In the chat, we have Cindy. Are you with us still? Oh,
yes, I'm here. I'm just driving. Oh, I can't show the camera.
No worries, Cindy. So Cindy, you had a question for the group. Do you want to ask it?
Yeah, I volunteer for a local nonprofit every year on their committee that does the program for the Leave Behind, the physical hard copy for the gala, the fundraising gala. And so every year I try to outdo the previous year. And we experimented with sleeking gold foil, the local printer volunteer last year. It came out kind of okay, but I was wondering if you guys had any additional ideas for either techniques or things that we could do for a fairly low budget that would be cool and different for this year. I'm just trying to brainstorm. And since this is a group of experts on foil embellishments, I was hoping somebody would give me some words and I'll go Google them like crazy how to do it.
Very cool. Well, listen, we're going to open up. Cindy, are you a designer or do you work with a printer or?
Oh, I work in the marketing department of an architecture firm.
Okay.
So my day job is kind of involved, but I really like volunteering for this group because they let me do pretty much anything as long as it doesn't cost too much.
Where are you located, Cindy?
In Pasadena, California.
Okay. Any ideas, guys? What do you guys recommend to Cindy?
Can you tell us again what the nonprofit is about?
Oh, this is a business nonprofit. So they help mostly women in the architecture, engineering, construction industry, like learn how to navigate the business world. That's traditionally been male dominated. And so it's not that we don't like guys. It's just to help them deal with construction guys. You know, it's just a whole different animal, really.
Yeah.
No offense taken. So so the nonprofit fundraiser thing is a big deal.
Yeah.
And a lot of our people, I do more fundraiser invitations than Christmas cards towards the end of the year. Far outweighs the number of Christmas cards or Christmas greetings that we do. And this was one of them. And this isn't even an invitation. This is just a heads up that they're going to get an invitation. That's how much money they spend on these things. And the nonprofits that we work with are admittedly not budget conscious. Well, they are to a degree, but once it gets to a certain point, they're like, we'll just back off a little bit. We'll do one less run. We'll do whatever. But companies like ours are, and I'm not saying that because I'm not in with our management anymore because we just had a corporate takeover. But if you can find a company that does digital embellishment, a print shop, finisher, whatever, that will sponsor your event, then they will greatly reduce the amount of the cost that you will have for creating those invitations. So, for example, we've done a lot of work for Make-A-Wish and you know, all these other charity events, and we'll sponsor them in order to get our logo on the back. We didn't do this one, but our logo will just appear on their printed piece as an event sponsor, and then the nonprofit will have a greatly reduced cost as far as getting a more upscale invitation out to the people who are just going to get it and say, oh my God, this is amazing, I've got to go. So that's something to consider.
And Cindy, just so you know, if you are ever in a position where you can help share some of that data with the printer, where maybe you do an A-B test where you look, we'll do half of them with embellishment, and then do half without, and just give us the results of the difference in response rates or whatever with the embellishments, and they could write a case study and use you guys as ammo. That's a way to get basically free embellishments with some of these brands and agencies and nonprofits, because nobody's giving them that data, and they need that data to arm their salespeople to say, look, this is why you should be doing embellishments. So I would really recommend using that strategy with printers.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's cool.
Reach out, because there's people I know in Vegas, which I know is not Pasadena, but it's close enough, I'd say, that might be interested.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I definitely will. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, do we know anybody in Pasadena that has embellishment equipment of some sort?
I know several people in LA. Yeah.
That's your neck of the woods, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm in Northern California.
Oh,
I get very sensitive about
that. You cannot confuse Northern and Southern California. That is not okay.
Exactly. That's North Ryan. And South Dakota. Thank you very much.
Is that Ryan?
It is Ryan.
I got you.
Dude, send him to Ryan. Ryan will help you out.
Well, that's
Ryan's in the
Ryan is not a printer. He wants to, I think what she's looking for and what you're recommending is go to a printer, because he can use it as a sales tool later on.
That's probably the easiest way to do it.
Not that I don't want you to do this, Ryan, don't get me wrong, but
no, but we actually might be able to work with you guys on something like that.
There you go, even better.
Yeah, send me your information. Let's talk, because we may be able to work out something where we run it on our embellishment machine here. And then,
the
you know, maybe
Ryan did. Just FYI.
Oh, nice.
Ryan is not on screen, so there we go. This is
I'm about to be.
I'm showing your card. I'm doing you one right here.
Sabine, you got me. Thank you.
Welcome. I got your back. So I love it, because it's elegant from a designer's perspective. See the fine gold lines. So
did you design that?
Me? No, I got this from Ryan.
Oh, is that Harrison Bruno card?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, it's VMA and Harrison Bruno.
VMA.
So I guess yeah. That was a fun event, by the way.
That was
Yeah, it was on the same day as we had our event. Not considerate, Ryan. We need to talk about this for next year.
I know Sabine chastised me for that one. I gotta work
it's
around
the
your
second
schedule.
Time. They always pick the same day that we have our events. I'm like, Ryan, really? Anyway, no, but yeah, that's even better. And I think this is a matte coated, or no, this is uncoated, right?
Uncoated.
Yeah. Bingo. Sure. Cindy, call Ryan.
Yeah, Cindy, toss me your information in the chat, and I'll reach out to you, and maybe we can work out something where we can help you guys out.
That'd be so great. Thank you so much.
Oh. No, absolutely.
All right. Very cool. So what else did you guys want to cover today? Is there anything that popped out, anything fun that you're seeing in the market today, any trends that we wanted to talk about as a group? Oh, Matt's got his hands up.
So I held this up earlier, and this seems to be gaining a lot of momentum, and it's these foil boards.
Yep.
And so there's all these different foil boards. There's all these different, you know, styles, different bases. A lot of it is holographic. You mask out the parts you don't want, and you end up with something like this. It requires white ink or white toner. But the whole idea, I think, is pretty amazing. The process is that it's cold foil, just spread on 100% over a substrate, just huge sheets of cold foil, and then they cut it up, and then you run the sheets through your printer. If it's too vivid, like some of these sheets, like, my God, how could you even look at that?
So, Matt, can you talk about it? Because I'm always concerned about the amount of white toner that needs to go down.
Mm.
Thanks, Bob. I like the gallery view because I see people who can agree with me. I'm always concerned about this because this is not a single hit of white, right?
It depends on if it's toner or if it's inkjet. You're going to have a better coverage with inkjet, particularly if you're on a flat printer, like our Swiss Q print. It's a huge flat bed and it just lays down a big fat layer of white. If you're going through a fifth or sixth color station, you're going to need a double hit of white without a doubt. Unless you're putting CMYK directly on top of the white, then you can get away with one hit. But if you want a total mask out like that, I mean, look at that. That's really stunning. Just the difference
in
the
sheen. Can't see anything, but you're kind of frozen.
Yeah.
Oh.
You're getting that stuff.
You're back. You're in and out.
Oh, sorry. Then I'll stop talking.
No, we can hear you. We can't see anything. And I think Mark also has a lot to say on this subject. No, you're kind of like the expert of white on oil board. What are your thoughts?
Well, what Matt was just saying, you know, the toner devices, it might take two hits. HP just came out with a new white a couple years ago, so they're doing much better with one hit. All the large format people are really busted it out with regard, like Swiss Q, I love what they do, and, you know, other ones. So the only problem is if you put too much white, then you can't let the effects come through. So you lose that break.
Right.
That's the only thing I've seen on the opaqueness. So yeah, I mean, this is a card we did with, you know, the HP Indigo.
And so that's foil board with white masking. So
yep.
All that
and then we
white
put a Scodex on top.
And so all that white I see is white toner?
Yep.
Wow.
So can I step back a second and be devil's advocate here? Why don't you just use a nice sheet and put the foil down where you need it and overprint it as opposed to flooding the whole thing with toner?
Well, sure. That's a good question. I mean,
Wait, mic drop. Bing.
So well, if you look, that's a good example. This side we used a lot of white. Here we didn't. Like Matt was.
No, I understand, but what I'm saying is if. I think it's depending on the percentage of foil where in my designer mind and my environmental mind, I'm like, is this worth using a foil board or would I be really better off putting
Sabine,
foil?
It's easier. It's easier to subtract out from a foil board layer than it is to add a foil on top of the paper. It's so much easier.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, I mean the
Thank
foil
you, Kevin.
Board.
I thought I was the only one. Everybody's nodding. Marco's nodding, and I'm like, okay, I'm the only one.
No.
from a production perspective, it's so much easier because I run an MGI foiling unit. I run an iFoil, so I know what a testy, you know, I mean everything is so particular. The alignment of the planets and the phase of the moon. It all depends on how your foil lays down today. And I'm sure other operators would corroborate that experience. And you think you have it dialed down one day, you dial up the next day to start the job, and everything's very different. But this is going to be very consistent. You're going to have a very consistent output, and it's a reverse
effect.
So it's
only one press, ultimately, as opposed to to and fro. Is that what you're telling me? Do I understand this correctly?
Say that again?
Because you're only running it through one press, like you only would run it through
one pass.
The iridesc.
Exactly. That's, you know, all these like.
Thank you. One pass. Thanks. Mark knows where I'm going with this one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I see what Mark's holding up, but I want to make one more point. A lot of the pharmaceutical labels on like small bottles of injectables and things like that, you'll see there's like a small foil area. Like around the edge or like a certificate of authenticity or something like that. There's like foil on there somewhere. They didn't lay that foil on there. No, they used a foil base label and then printed right. Everything else on top of it because it's easier.
Yeah.
So my thinking was depending on the toner, like, I get it, inkjet is more opaque, but on a toner press, you know, if you have like to do like a, and I have one of the HP pieces here where you need basically three hits of white to get it nicely on opaque. As a designer would like it, where it's another, really white.
Another, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Another perk that is that
these
foil boards are amazing for cartons. I mean, they don't, the edges don't crack.
You don't have the edge problem, yeah.
The edge problem is gone. It makes a very refined package. And so you don't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of paper, I wanted to tee up Sean and I want to tee up Sabine. On our last call, I don't know if you guys remember, there was a whole discussion where we couldn't get a certain type of paper. And I wanted to thank Sean because this is the community in action here. Sean actually went down the rabbit hole and chased up all the people for us. And I thought maybe Sean wanted to get some of the glory here on the call on what you found out and kind of what you found on those papers.
So I think one of the challenges that we discussed on the last call that we were talking on was around these uncoated stocks, and specifically I think around the Nina line that just released their classic embellishment line. So I did reach out to them. I think we forwarded it over to the group. I'm happy to share that around to the team as well, that their classic embellishment line is available in a variety of different sizes. They're actually making it in a larger sheet size for our KM1 digital inkjet press coming up soon. But if you're looking for like, a 1319 or 2029, they have it available in those sheet sizes today in both an eggshell and a white. The piece that, and forgive me everyone, I'm not on camera. I've been having some freeze up camera issues, but the piece that I was showing briefly earlier with the gold and silver is also on an uncoated stock. And that's actually just on a Cougar opaque. It's a 110 pound Cougar opaque cover, no pretreatment, right? So, but I will admit it's not very toothy or cockly, right? It's a nice smooth uncoated cover. And so I know that that's been one of the ongoing challenges with some of the people on the, especially on the, we talk about on the design side and on the operation side, is how do you put spot UV down on an uncoated stock and not have that amount of bead through? And I don't want to sit on this call and say, oh, it's easy, you know, you can put it on any uncoated stock and you're not going to get UV to bleed through. That's not the case, but the right uncoated stocks that have more of a very tight surface structure, at least on the from the MGI side, have had a lot of success with. I know the Federconi papers, obviously, that can be sometimes difficult to get a hold of in the U.S. and can not necessarily be most cost effective. Sabine knows that well. And they said the Cougar cover has been very, very popular. The Nina line is now available in the white and the eggshell. And we continue to do a lot of development and testing with papers that don't need any pre-treatment. I was over in our MGI headquarters, and I'll take a breath here in a second, be quiet, but I was over at our MGI headquarters not too long ago, a couple weeks ago in Paris, and there's quite a few different manufacturers, Esca, even some West Rock, the print coats, the custom coats, that don't need any pre-treatment, that have a nice open, uncoated kind of feeling or uncoated finish to them. If I can ever be of assistance, especially to this design community or the operator community, on, hey, have you tried, or what about, don't hesitate to shoot me a note. And either we've probably done the testing in our headquarters in New Jersey, or happy to do so, right? And we continue to expand that library.
Can I reach out to you about this, Sean? And can I get one of those Christmas cards, please? I've been on the night. I'm sure I was on the night.
For sure you are, Sabine. Yes, just shoot me a note on the side here. I'll make sure I get this into FedEx.
Yeah, I think I have your email. So is that easier?
Yeah, that's great. Okay.
So, hey, Sean, have you tried any of the Invercoat?
So that's a wonderful question. And some of the people that work with me often on the line know this. I don't have that answer, but I know the people that do. I'm happy to chase it down. Just like on the last call.
Sean, you asked that question.
Like, I don't know the answer.
Dude, you said that question with so much confidence. You came at that. I was like, oh, he knows this. And then you just came at so confidently, like, I don't know the answer. I was like, oh, wow.
No, that's right. When I don't know it, I don't know it. I'll tell you, but I'll find out on the Invercoat for sure. Maybe before this call's over.
When you look on that, also kick out the Sappy Spectro M version.
M as in
Mary.
I'm
a special M.
M.
What are you asking, Bob? Yep. What's the
the M?
The M stands for metal.
Oh.
So they're formulating a new paper that you know will run better with cold foil. It's smoother, uh-huh. And obviously they are also working on the uncoated side too. But we all know that the Invercoat uncoated side has a wash coat on it, so that's usually pretty smooth also.
Mm-hmm. Is that your go-to? Is that what you like to use?
I got a lot of go-tos. Depends who the customer is.
What a good answer.
Yeah, right? And depends what they want to pay.
Yeah.
Even better.
Absolutely.
You know, we talk about all these multiple passes through all the different machines, and then the customer looks at it and it's like, that's a little out of the budget, right? So mm-hmm. at least on the commercial mm-hmm. end, and for, you know, when you're dealing with one-offs or something, it's different. You know that.
Yeah. What? Can you really put a price on WOW, though, Bob?
No, I can't.
There's usually a limit when it comes to some of our clients, you got to admit.
Yeah.
Don't go so far. Okay. We've only got like 4 minutes left, but we haven't heard from Harvey Hirsch.
Can you hear me?
Glad to see you on the call. Yes, we can. What's going on with you?
So I ran an agency for like 35 years.
Wow.
And one of our customers was Blue Cross. And we put the foil on the medallion.
Wow.
And it increased the response rate.
By how much?
It got up 5.6% response, and the last time they mailed, they got nothing.
Wow.
That's high. Usually expect 2.
Ed Design, we've generated an amazing amount of response.
That is phenomenal data right there.
Just a little foil.
I do a lot of die cutting. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what's commonly called a dog's breakfast.
Oh.
Wow, look at that.
All hand assembled. Can you see that?
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they're going to buy 15,000 of them at $5 a piece.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm in the wrong business. That is great.
So, being you remember this one.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you're echoing out.
We're getting a bit of an echo.
We have you twice. We have you on twice. That's probably it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wonder how I could cut that down.
I'll take care of it.
But
pick the right one to
engage.
Right,
people like to engage. I won't do anything unless it's personalized.
Very nice. That's great, Harvey.
That is a really cool piece.
You haven't sent me anything in eons, so I'm sorry.
I'm tired.
Yeah, but obviously you still have cool stuff.
He's old enough, he doesn't have to work.
Well, there is that, but he's here. So but I think good design and good results never go out of style. You know what I'm saying? And they can only inspire somebody else to say, wait a second, I didn't think of that.
Right.
No, nobody thinks about die cutting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we do.
I die cutting all the time.
Yeah, we do.
When you're ready for die cutting, let me know. I'll prepare something for you to take it to the next level.
I'm always ready for die cutting.
I love die cutting. Everything I did is die cut.
I think especially with digital cutting available today and a lot of the PSPs, like the print service providers, having digital options as well. It makes it so much easier for smaller print runs as well.
What I've seen is all these data companies going out of business, which means the clients are not buying data.
Right.
And they're not personalizing their mailings. They're buying more and more, but getting less and less response.
Well, this is one of the
cycles, right? It cycles. You get hot and then you get cold.
You got to come to my friends webinar, people, because you're not on trend there.
No. Well, it's surprising, though.
I'm selling from a marketing standpoint, and all they want is responses. And if you're able to beat the last mailing, you could get away with anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to that hour already. What an unbelievable discussion with you guys. I love what we discover on every single one of these meetings. A big thank you to our sponsors. Thank you, MGI. Thank you, Paper Specs. Thank you, the Digital Embellishment Alliance. And guys, always a pleasure. And on behalf of everybody, we'd like to thank you and see you next year, I guess.
Yeah.
Holidays.
Happy New Year.
And see you guys later.
Wait, Matt's not the only one. I just realized I have this handy, so there.
Nice.
That's good.
Very nice, everybody.
Yeah. All right.
Happy holidays.
Everybody.